Blog Talk Radio.
In much less detail, the podcast, where we cut through the noise and give you your NFL breakdown in much less detail. Here are your hosts, Jay and Dre. Y'all know what time it is. It is time for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. Here at you live on a Wednesday night, October the 3rd, 2018. I'm Dre, he's Jay. We are in the building and ready to go. Although I do not know if I'm heard at the moment. Jason, can you hear me?
I can hear you this time.
Oh, good. We thought we were going to connect for a second before the show started, but I was not being heard, so I had to jump on another way, and thankfully that is working out. So we are here. We are ready to recap week four in the NFL. We had a bookending of great football on Thursday night to start week four and really compelling football on Monday night to end it, and a lot of stuff in between, of course, but most importantly, of course, has nothing to do with football. Jay, go ahead and update everybody on your mother and the situation and how everything went with her visit to the hospital.
Oh, everything's good. Everything went according to what the doctor said. No surprises. I guess that's the best thing you want to hear from a doctor after somebody is having surgery on their spine. So I'd left the hospital this morning because it was in Minnesota, so I was 4 hours away. So I was there the last 3 days, just left this morning, kind of a whirlwind 3 days. So I'm pretty tired, but nowhere near as much as what my mom's going through. But yeah, she's doped up on some pretty good pain meds right now, and she's got her neck in a brace and kind of immobilized. But she's up. She can walk around a little bit with some assistance. She can eat. So all as far as I know as well. So
that's great.
So thanks for asking. I know we had kind of ended the show on that note on the last way. So she's doing good. When I last saw her and texted her a few times today, she's got access to her, to her devices. And I took the long trek home. So I'm here ready to go. A little tired, but I'll make it through.
Yeah, we're both a little tired. This is yet again after my bowling league, so I'm struggling and wandering into the house sore and beat up, but at least we won a couple games tonight, so that's good. It was a eventful week four. As far as our picks go, this is incredible the way that we can see certain things happening and agree completely, and it goes that way. But then when it comes to figure out what our lock of the week is going to be, that doesn't work out because we had that predicted sunning of the Miami Dolphins by the New England Patriots. We had that locked up completely, except we didn't make it our lock of the week because we thought the L.A. Chargers against C.J. Beathard would be such a lock. And that didn't quite work out for us. So I don't know if you wanted to start there or in a different area altogether.
No, I don't think there's really a whole lot to talk about there because it wasn't like it was compelling football. That's more of a talking about the result as far as how it relates to our picks and how I passed up. Even on the show, I'm talking about all of these lock of the week games that I passed up. That had I picked any of those, I would have had my lock because I was like, oh, I contemplated Jacksonville. I contemplated New England. I was very certain about Green Bay. I had no faith in Buffalo even getting the big points going up to Green Bay. No, I passed all those up. Passed them all up so I could take the Chargers, who've been massive underachievers so far early in the season, laying 11 at home. And they had to basically pull out a last second, like a come from behind style win to take out C.J. Beathard and the San Francisco 49ers. So maybe Jimmy Garoppolo isn't all that great.
You know, I kind of mentioned that last week. If C.J. Beathard comes in and they compete with him, then what does that say about old Janine Garofalo? I don't know.
but again, I have a feeling that we've got a little bit of what the Vikings did the week before against Buffalo, where the Chargers probably just completely took the game for granted because, San Francisco's done, right? It's over. They can mail it in, and the Chargers looked like they were mailing it in for three quarters.
Yeah, we called the trap. We said that the trap had been set. I put Elvis next to it, and sure enough,
it's a trap.
We got caught. We knew it was coming. We still got caught.
You know, it's funny because we've fallen into these traps almost every week now that we've called them.
It's incredible.
So we're making the pick. We identify it as a trap, laugh at it, go, oh, it's a trap, and then the trap is sprung. So, if anybody's been listening to our show for advice, if we say it's a trap, it's a trap. Don't pay attention to our pick. Pay attention to the fact that we're calling the trap game.
Yeah, I did all this research about these big spreads early in the year. Don't do it. Be careful. Don't do it. And then I just go ahead and give all the points. And I'm just looking at the box, or not the box score, but the highlights, the score underneath the game that I'm watching. And I'm just seeing that score come across, and the Niners are winning, and they're hanging in there, and they're looking. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you really with C.J. Beathard? I don't even know what to say about that one. Just, you know, but I guess I may have been on a little bit to something talking about the Shanahanigans and how they really are. Kyle Shanahan really is coaching the hell out of it over there in San Francisco. Starting, of course, last year with Jimmy Garoppolo, and now this with C.J. Beathard. I don't know. I guess maybe we shouldn't be so surprised if C.J. Beathard comes in and actually kind of hangs around and keeps the Niners somewhat competitive, as we've been seeing in so many spots as far as the Rams and the Eagles, and at least for 1 week, the Bears. If you get great coaching of the quarterbacks, you can do amazing things. Of course, the Chiefs on Monday night. If you get a great coach that knows what he's doing and can mold and shape the quarterback, no matter who the quarterback is, I guess you can really do anything if you got the right coaches doing what they got to do in the coaching rooms.
Yeah, and I guess from more of a betting standpoint, what really stood out to me, I believe we had two pushes this week. A very rare two-push week. And also, we had I had one win that slid in very cheaply, and then we also slid in extremely cheap on Monday night.
That's right.
So I am the proud beneficiary of two very cheap wins. We're not going to dwell too much on that Detroit Dallas game because it wasn't a whole lot to talk about there. But thank you, I'll take it.
I'll dwell on the Detroit-Dallas game for a minute, not too long, but it happened to be one of the games that I could watch the whole thing. And I just want to give, you know, the props when they're due, because I slam Dak Prescott all the time, and when he plays a very good game, I want to be able to give the credit as well. Actually, for both sides, both the Lions and the Cowboys in that game, what fascinated me was the importance of the run setting up the pass was on full display for both teams that entire game. For Detroit, the first play of the game was a draw play to Kerryon Johnson, and he ran untouched for 32 yards, right? So that just sets up Matthew Stafford to use play action and make confident throws the entire rest of the game, and really put together a full game plan for the Lions. And then for the Cowboys, of course, Zeke Elliott just beasting all day. But he got the first three carries. The first three plays for Dallas were carries for Ezekiel Elliott. And he got stuffed on a little cute read option on third down. So that's a three and out. But what that did was make Detroit aware that he's coming all day. They're going to feed him all day, and they better look for him. So what happens the second series? They got a sweet play action going left that just fooled everybody. Everybody on the Lions is just running left. And Dak goes right to a tight end named Jeff Swain, and he has a 31-yard catch and run. And then on the same series, another play action. This was a bomb to that rookie Michael Gallup for 37 yards. And then Dak is off and running now. That just opens up the whole playbook for Dak Prescott. And, hey, I slam him on the regular, but, you know, I call it like it is. And when I saw that game and he was making some outstanding throws, I was like, okay, well, Dak Prescott is playing some really good football, and I can't believe I'm saying that. But he really had a really good game, even at the Rodgers special at one point, the little hard count free play. He had the offense running with some pace. They were trying to catch Detroit in some mismatches. They were going up tempo. The reason Dallas didn't cover and gave you the backdoor win with Detroit being 3-point dogs and Dallas winning by two, it wasn't because of the offense. It was because the defense just took turns either getting trucked in the open field by the Lions every series or leaving Golden Tate just wide open for no reason at all. I don't know how you do that, but I call it
John
like
Lee
I see it. The whole thing, the entire defensive balance of the Cowboys is because Sean Lee was missing in action, and that just throws everybody off.
Can't be overstated. Just
he's the great Sean Lee. Yeah. Well, you can't. His mouth is full. But, yeah, I just wanted to give the props to Dak. When he's off, I say so. And when he's on, I say so. And he was definitely on Sunday. And they should have won and covered that game.
Yeah, and before we start getting into a couple of the juicier topics, too, I know it was the only game of the weekend that I sent you a text about. We got to talk about your winning ugly Titans.
I don't even know how to talk about them. They just keep winning. They just keep winning.
Winning ugly.
That's as ugly as it gets, too. Just, and I guess Marcus Mariota is – it was interesting that he seemed like he didn't want to pull out his arm until he had to. So maybe it's got better over the past week or so, but Mariota was very, very afraid to throw the ball anywhere near deep last week. And now this week – he's losing to the Philadelphia Eagles. I think they were down a couple of possessions there at one point. And it's like, okay, fine, I'll try to throw deep. And I guess I can kind of throw deep. So it became something where they could actually open up and try some different things to make a comeback. Because if you're trying to make a comeback against any team, much less the world champion Eagles, it's going to look really terrible if your quarterback can't throw more than 5 yards downfield. But because he could actually throw, that was that allowed them to actually be able to compete and try to make a comeback. And lo and behold, they come all the way back and win that game. The Eagles' defense was so worn out on that overtime drive. They were so dog-tired. So I'm not trying to make excuses, but that's what happens when you are winning ugly. You find ugly ways to win games, and then the Titans found another way.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Titans team. This is not a team that we think is built for coming back. That's down 17-3 or down two touchdowns in the third quarter. We don't think Marcus Mariota is able to throw. He goes for 344.
Right.
I mean, if you would have told me before the game Mariota's going to go for 344, we would have both taken the opposite of that bet, right? We would have bet against that.
Of course.
You know, Marcus Mariota is going to go for 300 when you probably figured his passing line was going to be like 12 for 18 for 85 yards.
But as C.J. Beathard proved to us, we don't know what we think we know.
Yeah. So, and actually a very interesting and fun overtime. I have it under this new overtime rule. And it might not be the first time it's happened, but I haven't seen one yet. So this is the first one that I've seen. I could be corrected, obviously, because I'm sure it's happened, but it was interesting because it was the overtime where the Eagles get the field goal and then the Titans go back and get the touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm sure it's happened. I just don't remember exactly when.
I don't remember it happening. And also the fact that they scored that touchdown with 5 seconds left to go.
Yeah.
If Corey Davis, if that ball falls incomplete, they're kicking the field goal for a tie. We could have had our third tie in four games.
How about the rookie coach Mike Vrabel going for it before that, because he could have went for a field goal down there,
yeah,
on fourth down and settled for yet another tie, and instead he had them go out there on fourth and I think four and then go for it, and they convert that and were able to complete the drive for the touchdown. That's some balls, man. If it doesn't work, everyone's laughing and snickering, yeah, at them, but it works. So you got to give them the props.
Now that would have been a long field goal. I want to say it would have been like a 53 yarder, if I'm remembering the flow of the game from that point, the one that they passed up. So it wasn't a chip shot. It wasn't like he passed up one from the, you know, from the 18 yard line.
No, but it's still his kicker is Ryan Suckup. He's no slouch.
Yeah.
He can actually kick. Some of these kids that I wouldn't trust him to kick at 40, much less 53, but Suckup can actually kick. So it's not a chip shot, but it's I would not have had the guts to go for it. I'll just say that if I had Ryan Suckup and it's 53 yards, I would have went for the field goal myself.
Yeah, we're at the quarter pole here for just about all these teams, and the Tennessee Titans are exactly where I said they'd be in first place.
Yeah,
an ugly. Ugly first place.
A win's a win. The W looks the same.
you can't take them away. But I that's all three. I'm sorry. That's all three wins for them. Doing what you have to do to win games and winning different ways. Every single one of those wins, the win over the Dolphins where they had to roll out Blaine Gabbert.
Yeah.
and pull out some like the special teams tricks and everything they could do just to shadow the fact that Blaine Gabbert was their quarterback. Then to follow that up with the win over the Jaguars in a defensive struggle. And now here to basically win in a comeback and in shootout style fashion. Where you look at the passing lines for Wentz and Mariota, they're almost identical. They're completely interchangeable. Same quarterback rating. They almost threw for the exact same amount of yards. You know, one guy had a 7.0, the other one had an 8.0 on his yards per attempt. They both threw two touchdowns. They almost had the exact same passing line. You would have never gotten me to admit or think before the game that Mariota was going to have the same passing line as Carson Wentz.
No, and
throwing to guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And Delanie Walker's gone.
I was about to say one of the best targets on the team is Delanie Walker. He's not even there. He's already injured and out for the year.
Right. You know, so in the grand scheme of all the interesting games and the storylines, I wanted to make sure we got this game talked about because this one I think is going to be overshadowed by, you know, some of the other things that we had happen this last week. But a very interesting, exciting game. Didn't expect it. Did not expect that game to be anywhere near as compelling as it was.
So interesting and exciting to this Southwest Tennessee market that I'm living in that we didn't get that game. They didn't even have the Titans game game. We didn't get that game.
How's that work? It's not your local market?
We pretty much get every Titans game, but we didn't get this one. I don't exactly know why, but we did.
The blackout. I mean, do they still do that?
No. Well, yeah, they do, but I can't remember the last time a NFL game wasn't sold out somewhere. I mean, they always, if it comes within 20,000, the owner will just buy those up and paper it and call it a sellout. So maybe that was it. It might have been the not sold out down in Nashville. I don't actually know. But all I know is I tuned into CBS expecting to see that game, and it wasn't. Actually, it would probably be on Fox because Philadelphia's NFC team on the road, but it wasn't on either one. CBS had the Patriots, I believe, and Fox had the Lions and the Cowboys.
Interesting. So well, you got to watch that Cowboys, you know, you got to say something nice about Dak Prescott because of it. You might not have normally done that.
I actually got to watch a whole game plan unfold that gave Dak Prescott a chance to look good, which was just stunning. The one thing about the Titans that I'll ask you, I guess, being the maybe Titans expert, since you're the one that had them winning the division amongst us. But what do you think of the fact that they're winning all these games in the one way that we – I shouldn't speak for anyone but myself, but the one way that I thought was their best way of having offensive success coming into this year was to run through Derrick Henry. They're not doing that. They haven't done that yet. Is that a good thing or a bad thing, or is that just a thing?
You know, I'm thinking with Derrick, because we know what Derrick Henry is capable of, and he's just clearly something's happened where he hasn't been able to just be, you know, the guy so far for them. And I don't know if that's because other teams are now, they're game planning to stop that Titan run game, and they're trying to force Marcus Mariota to throw to win. But if Mariota is going to go for 300, that's going to start to loosen up the run game. And Derrick Henry's clearly fresh. He's not getting a lot of carries. He hasn't really been doing anything in the passing game. I think as we get deeper into the season, he becomes more important for them because, you know, the weather's going to start getting cold. You're not going to be seeing as much of the high-flying offense. You know, weather's going to start to become more of a factor. You're going to have more cold, more wind. You're going to have a lot more issues to deal with, you know, bad turf. I think Derrick Henry becomes more important for them as the season goes on. Just the fact that they're 3-1 with all the adversity that they've had to face here early on and getting nothing out of the running game is maybe a good sign for them.
This is a way to think of it. I hadn't really thought of it that way. Apropos of nothing, Derrick Henry has been cut in my fantasy league. That's how bad of a start he's
off
to. Wow.
I'd scoop him up. If you've got a bench buster, I would scoop him up and stash him.
My waiver wire claim is out there
is
and ready
pending?
To be processed. It is pending.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, that's not, I'm not saying you grab them and you plug them in right away, but as a, you know, buy and hold guy for some favorable matchups, I would definitely take him.
So the one rookie coach in Vrabel going forward, that was a yay. That worked out. There's another rookie coach that went for it. That was a boo in Frank Reich for the Indianapolis Colts. That was another overtime game against the Texans, which I don't know if you saw how this broke down, but they're in overtime. The time's really close to running out on overtime. That looks like it's going to be a tie as well. And it's 4th and 4 for the Colts from their own 43-yard line. And they lined up once to – look like they're going to go for it. The TV announcers were going crazy, like they can't possibly be going for this. And they barked out some calls trying to get the offsides. They did not get the offsides, so they called timeout. And the announcers assumed that they're going to send the punt team out to kick it away, and it's going to be, you know, like 30 seconds, 20 seconds left. And pin them deep and just know that they're not going to get all the way down to field goal range in 30 seconds unless you're really, really terrible, and you're going to get the tie. And instead, they come back out after the timeout with the offense on the field again, and they go for it on 4th and 4, whatever it was. And Andrew Luck leaves the throw short, short hops his target, turn the ball over on downs. The Texans run one play, and it's a pass in the middle of the field for 20-some-odd yards to New Hopkins, and they're able to stop the clock and get the field goal and win the game. And Frank Reich afterwards is basically very defiant and just right out, hey, 100 out of 100 times I'm going for it in that situation because I need my guys to know that I believe in them and we're going to be that type of aggressive team and go for it. I guess I understand his sentiment behind that, but I just know at the time that he did it, I was like, oh, this is a mistake. This is going to backfire. And this was a stupid move.
Oh no, it was absolutely stupid. I mean, the announcers on the TV, I watched that happen and the announcers are going apeshit. I mean, it was crazy. Seeing your impartial, you know, national broadcast team. This isn't the local guys. You know, this isn't the, you know, this isn't Detroit, you know, sort of like piss and vinegar that you're getting from the local guy. This is the national guys all over Frank Reich. The silliness of the call, especially as it's happening, they don't get it, and then immediately on the first play, you know, that's it. Houston goes for the kill shot and perfectly manages what little time they had to get in there, get the spike, and stop the clock, and boom, kick the field goal and get out of there. I mean, it looked like it was going to be another tie. I guess for the Colts, that would have been preferable at this point. Excuse me. And another good game. You know, I mean, the Colts have the furious comeback. I mean, they're getting completely – they're another team that's down a ton. But here, the 28-10 third quarter. I mean, that game's looking like – we're looking like geniuses, you know, being on Houston in that one. I believe we both were.
And another limp-armed quarterback that mounts a furious comeback. I guess Andrew Luck's arm is feeling better.
And all of a sudden, Andrew Luck is completely capable of throwing because he goes for 464. So AFC South quarterbacks with bad arms can apparently just put up giant numbers. But Deshaun Watson put up huge numbers. We had, 830 yards passing in that game. Just insane. What the numbers that we're seeing going back and forth, you know, and the Colts couldn't run out of a phone booth in that game. But what you're seeing from the receivers, just crazy. I mean, Andrew Luck completes balls to eight different guys caught balls in that game for them. He clearly is going to be able to move offense, and he showed it right here. Especially more, you know, kind of with their backs against the wall. And Houston, though, I give them full credit. They capitalized on the mistakes of the Colts. They did the wrong thing by letting them back into the game. They clearly couldn't put them away. That team is not anywhere near as good as we thought it was going to be. I thought they were gonna stomp them out in regulation, and they just couldn't do it.
They haven't stopped anyone through the air since A.J. Boye left through free agency. Yeah. I don't think it's all because A.J. Boye left, but they had a lockdown secondary a couple years ago, and it's been very, very leaky ever since.
So, yeah, Andrew Luck took full advantage of them in coming back. And, you know, it's so easy now with in this league to come back from these big numbers. Being down two touchdowns, three touchdowns, it doesn't mean anything anymore.
No, it's easier than ever to make a big comeback. The rules allow it, formations, the coaching, the athletes. Offense is king in football right now. But the thing about that to me is that's regular season football, as we discovered last year and the year before that and the few years before that. You get to the playoffs and you try to win a title just offense and trying to light up the scoreboard, and you run into a top defense, you're going to get hurt. You're going to get shut down and hurt real bad. So it's not the total revolution yet, because it's still on a good defense to stop a good offense and find a way to win.
Right, but for regular season, this is perfect, because in the playoffs, obviously, the quality of play is improved. It's mostly, not all the time, but it's mostly the best of the best duking it out, and it's much more of a chess match, where in the regular season, it is a lot more freewheeling and high-flying. But we're seeing it right now, where these astronomical scores, these big comebacks. Teams don't know, nobody needs to run the ball anymore. And that's, again, as we start to go, like I was talking about with Tennessee, you're going to start to get deeper into the season, and it's going to start to look more like football again, not arena football.
Well, perhaps. For some teams, it certainly should calm down. And for others, like the Rams and Chiefs, it looks like it's never going to calm down. We got a half hour left in our live show. To listen to the show as a podcast after we're done live, we usually have a little bit of an after show, or sometimes a lot of an after show. But the podcast version is available in many different outlets. You can go to iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Just search for In Much Less Detail, the podcast. You can subscribe in any different number of podcasting apps and websites. That includes TuneIn and Mixcloud and Player.fm, just to name a few. Different ways to communicate with the show. You can email us. You can send that to inmuchlessdetail@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @IMLDDre. You can follow Jason @IMLDJTG. And you can follow our picks on our blog site. And the blog is inmuchlessdetail.blogspot.com. And you're listening live. The only place you can listen to us live is the website blogtalkradio.com/inmuchlessdetail, where we are here recapping week four, breaking it on down. We didn't really talk much about Miami getting the little brother beat down by New England, but there's really not much to talk about because when you get a beat down, it doesn't leave much conversation to be had.
Yeah, probably the pick that I think when you actually go back, if you listen to that show last week, you want to talk about confidence.
That was kind of our lock if you listen to the words we were
saying.
We
knew. We just, yeah. You just knew it was going to happen. This is the narrative every year that the Patriots are going to, oh, what's wrong with the Patriots? They're done for, and they're going to have a division rival who's going to roll in this bad division, who's going to think that they're the hot shit and they're going to take control. And the Patriots just slapped them right back down. And the Patriots just absolutely whipped the Dolphins on Sunday.
I don't want to do the conspiracy theory thing, but I would be remiss not to point out that the Patriots were about to go, I believe, 3-and-out on their first series. It's either the first or second series. And you know how you find a third down pass that falls incomplete and you find yourself looking for the flag because you can't believe any pass with as pass happy as football is right now, as offensive as the NFL is, offensive, however you want to pronounce that. Every time there's a third down play in which the ball hits the ground, you're like, okay, where's the penalty? And this time it was not even, there's a flag. This time it was the ball hits the ground incomplete. And then like a full second and a half later, you actually see the referee pull the flag out and throw it. The ball's down. The play is dead. And the referee then decides, okay, I need to throw a flag for defensive holding and then extend the drive and first down New England. And it's like, okay, really? We're calling penalties 5 seconds after they happen now? I don't want to say that it was just, and the Dolphins are so, they probably know that they're 3-0 on paper only. They probably know that they're not nearly that good. So it seemed like they were, I guess, suggestive or not quite sure the word that I'm looking for, but they kind of played like they, okay, that was our chance to get off the field and the referees gave them another chance. Now it's our time to back down and let New England do what they're going to do. Okay, that was it. Now it's time for us to get our asses whooped. It's so weird how one call or one play can kind of switch everything like that. Like the Dolphins went from ready to compete and ready to hang in there for the day to, okay, that's it. We're finished. We're done.
Yeah, but we see this all the time now. I mean, you know, I've been railing on these little weird penalties, and not even just with the Patriots. You know, I mean, I pointed this out in the Super Bowl against Atlanta that when the Patriots were way down and the game was getting to blowout territory on three consecutive third down plays where the Falcons got off the field, there were, we'll just call them convenient defensive holding penalties that just kept the drive going. Even, you know, it's like, how many times is this team going to have to try to get off the field? And that was the touchdown that just made it 28-9. That was the first touchdown. Like, it was almost like one of these things, like, you know, like I always equated it to the NBA live with the keep scores close option. Like, you know, something was going on. It was like, we can't have that, because Atlanta gets off the field at any point there. game's over. I mean, nothing else happens the way it happened after that if the Patriots can't even get to 28-9. And that drive was just – that was punishment to watch because, you know, they're going back and they're showing the replays. And anytime you show these defensive holding penalties, it's pretty much like the guys look at it and the announcers kind of go like, well, okay, I guess they called that one.
Yeah, usually they try to be spying like, I don't know about that one, Chief.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, in the actual flow of this game, though, the Patriots finally got some production out of their running game, something the Dolphins were not able to do. Tom Brady played okay. He played, you know, he was Tom Brady against a better team. I'm not sure that this is the exact same outcome, but the Patriots didn't need their A game against the Dolphins because the Dolphins were the worst 3-0 team in football.
Yeah, better team to let Cordero Patterson just run free like that for that touchdown, just wide open. A better team doesn't let Sony Michel just run all over them, Sony Michel, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
And the Patriots, I don't know if Josh McDaniels went to the drawing board, but they seem to be coming out with some new kind of zone blocking schemes for their runs, and the Dolphins were getting like, I don't recall the last time I saw a running defense get blown off the ball consistently like that. Like, I was looking for them on the screen. Like, where'd they go? The ball would be snapped, and there would be no Dolphins in the picture. And I'm like, where'd they go? I just saw 7 men in the box, and they're gone. They just disappear like a magic trick. Where the hell did they go? So it was in all facets that the Patriots dominated that game. And that was another network TV trick was, you know how you used to watch a game that was such a blowout that they would just quit and go to another game? They did that.
Wow.
The Patriots, they left that game in the third quarter and went right to Falcons and Bengals because they were like, this is not worth it anymore.
That's old school.
Yeah. We're out. We're done. We've seen enough.
We'll come back to this game. Because it's our local game, but we will not come back to this game unless it gets like within a certain number of points or becomes really interesting again.
This game is such a piece of shit that we will now take you to a whole nother city and a whole nother game. Goodbye from New England, everybody. Yeah, that was bad. So did you, you had a crazy weekend with your mom.
Yeah.
How much of the primetime games did you get to see?
I saw – okay, so Sunday night I actually watched quite a bit of the Baltimore-Pittsburgh game, but I actually ended up checking out of that game when it was still somewhat competitive and then the Ravens pulled away in the second half. So I was still watching that game when it was still a game. And then the Monday night game, I kind of caught off and on because, you know, my mom's surgery wasn't until Tuesday. So we had to drive up to the area where the hospital was on Monday. So I was actually able to – I was in a casino on Monday night, and I was actually able to catch bits and pieces of that game. And I did catch the some of the fourth quarter, some of the comeback, you know, the touchdown that got it to a little bit more striking distance for the Chiefs. I believe that was the touchdown to Kelsey. I saw that one. And I didn't see the final drive. I also saw the touchdown early on when Mahomes ran it in. That I caught as well.
Yeah, I got the game on DVR, but I have not gotten to the second half yet. So that's one that but I have a lot of opinions about that first half because that was some special football. So I don't know the intimacies about the comeback, but I do know that Kansas City can stay in any game because of a couple of different factors that we knew about coming in, but just to see it live was pretty special. That howitzer that Pat Mahomes has, that just he just guns that ball wherever he wants. It's a special arm. It's I don't want to do this to him because it's a lot of pressure, but you know how you see certain arms that you go, that's special. That Brett Favre, that arm was special. Dan Marino, that arm was special. This looks like a special arm to me, and we shouldn't be too surprised because, again, he's the son of a major league closer.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, it's still special to watch. That ball just gets there in such a hurry.
I'm glad you didn't steal the analogy that I've been thinking about with Mahomes. I haven't brought it up on the show, but he's a – I hate to say this because I don't want to jinx his career, but when you look at just – the body style, the way he loads up, the way he throws, and then the juice that ball comes out of his hand with, he looks to me like a smaller Jeff George.
Oh no.
I know, but watch him throw.
That was a special arm.
George was a bigger guy. He wasn't as mobile. Well, if you watch the load up, he's got a lot of that, you know. So if you watch any of the Pat Mahomes highlights and you think back, start looking at it, because that's who I saw when I was watching him with those throws, especially the fact that a lot of the throws are very powerful.
Yeah.
He can drop it in, but he hasn't quite learned the touch yet. Not yet. He's dropping them in mostly on arm, and he's like aiming them into where they need to go. I still haven't seen him make a lot of the throws where he's taking a little something off of them to get them into spots. And that's a problem that's something George never learned.
Right. That's exactly why he never made it, because every throw that he threw, he was trying to gun it 95 miles an hour.
Yeah, it was all on a line and no touch.
Yeah, there's plenty of arms that have been special that came into the NFL and didn't last because they never developed touch, because they never maybe the quarterback didn't develop the vision to see guys that were open and they were afraid to try to get it to them, so they decided, let me check down to this guy and just gun it to him instead of going somewhere else. I brought up the Hall of Fame arms because those are the first ones that pop into my mind, but there are plenty of arms that have came into the league that didn't last. And maybe one of the differences is coaching as well. I can't go through all of the coaches that Jeff George had in his career, but obviously none of them threw to him. None of them that got through, and all those other great arms never had a coach that got through to them either. But maybe Pat Mahomes is going to be on that Hall of Fame trajectory because he's got a coach in Andy Reid, and that's the second factor that keeps the Chiefs in any game, is Andy Reid with the special playmakers and the special plays and the special formations and certain formations and things that I had not ever seen before. We've had that in the Monday night game too. I don't recall ever seeing a game with three men go in motion one at a time, all to the same side. Like, okay, now it's my turn. And then I stop and now it's the other guy's turn. I'm like, wait, what? It was kind of dizzying to watch all that at some points on Monday, but Mahomes is certainly getting an education in football, and I haven't seen the comeback either, but it's no surprise that they were able to mount a comeback the way they play, because it leaves your head spinning. So the Broncos, I'm sure were just, they at some point you got to be like, what are they doing? Do you know who we're covering? Cause I don't know. Cause they just made a bunch of motions and I have no idea who's going where and what's happening. Very, very hard to play them. But, of course, the other thing is the Chiefs have to be dizzying like that and try to do all they can on offense to overcome that pathetic, pathetic defense.
Yeah, it's special at how bad it is. The Chiefs are the Steelers. I mean, basically those two teams, you think about it, except with just a young, more mobile quarterback, loaded offensive talent, both teams, although I give, actually right now, I'd have to give a slight edge to Kansas City at the overall skill positions just because they have the better running back. But and then neither one of those teams has any defense. And we and there was your prime time matchup. And then the Steelers, I'm sorry, just couldn't score. We said the only way the Steelers are going to win this game is it's going to be a shootout. They got held to 14. With that defense, they're not going to win. The Steelers score 14 points every week. They're going to lose every week.
Zero in the second half. It was quite amazing.
Yeah.
We have a caller on the line. Area code 404. Please state your name, where you're from, and what's on your mind.
Yeah, this is Naj in Atlanta, man. What's going on?
What's going on, Naj? What's up?
Ain't much, man. I'm sitting there listening to y'all. I want to kind of throw something out there, though, as far as the defensive issues that those teams have. If you got the majority of your cap on offense and the majority of your high-value players on offense, does it make sense at this point to just kind of roll with the idea that your defense is not going to be that talented? Because if nobody's going to pound the rock and make time of possession an issue where you don't get the ball back, your bad defense is going to get stops periodically and it's going to get turnovers periodically. So, I mean, honestly, what's the incentive to do anything else on defense? You might as well keep loading up on offense. So I think that's the conclusion some of these teams have come to. If, you know, some of your picks don't work out on defense, or, you know, you didn't have money for free agency to fill your defensive holes, you might as well just put your, you know, your average replacement level player in there and kind of roll with the punches. I think that's what the Saints are doing. That's what the Chiefs are doing, the Steelers. Because, look, I mean, just look around. Everybody's not an offensive juggernaut. Some of these bad defenses are going to get enough stops for you to win. But like you said, if Pittsburgh scores 14, yeah, they're supposed to lose. That's the way your cap is driven. So, you know, it's really no issue. But if you're the Giants and you hold the Saints to four straight field goals and your offense can't generate enough points to win, that's an Eli issue, not the defensive issue. So I just think just with the rule changes and so many different things that are going against the defense, if you're not hitting on all your picks defensively, it kind of makes sense to just, you know, try to scheme your way through it, if that makes sense to you guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, Jason, what do you think about that?
I think this goes back to the conversation, Dre, that you and I had earlier in the show about regular season versus postseason. Like, every single one of those points is completely valid for the regular season. But when you get to the postseason, and you, especially Andre, last year you were the champion of this about all the defensive metrics and how much it mattered in the postseason, and that the special defenses were generally winning out, and you know, and in our case covering spreads, that it did matter. And if you had just informed your picks through the postseason on just the metrics that you were using on defense, it made all the difference. You didn't listen to yourself, so it ended up making our picks more competitive in the end, which was good. It's more compelling that way. But, you know, let's look at a team, you know, right down in your city there, Naj. Let's look at the Falcons, a team that was built to score a ton of points. That's my team, it's my quarterback, man. that's my team, but they've lost every level of their defense a superstar player, and they've gone from basically being a Super Bowl contender to a team of also-rans now because they can't stop anybody. And this is going to be all year for them now. This 37-36 or whatever the score was the week before against New Orleans, that's going to be their whole season, what we just saw the last 2 weeks. And it is going to matter at some point if a team's able to actually, you know, produce on defense, especially season progresses, we get to the cold weather, teams are going to have to start playing in the cold and the snow and the rain and the wind. Running game and defense are slowly going to start to become more important. And the teams that are just high-flying now, I don't know if they'll be high-flying all year long. I don't think the Chiefs in Kansas City where they play are going to be putting up the numbers that they're putting up as we go. But they can run the ball, so they're at least built a little bit more for that. But the teams that have all these big problems on defense are going to struggle. They may make the playoffs, but you're going to run into Jacksonville or Philadelphia. You're running into somebody who can just shut you down, and they're going to lose.
No, you make a great point to it. Like, yeah, the windows get tighter. Everything gets a little more difficult. The scores aren't going to be as easy to come by. So, yeah, the playoffs are going to be a whole different animal. It's going to be dependent on who you get matched up with. Like, that'll determine how far you go. So I agree with you on that. But, like I said, if you're that team, there's no quick fix to kind of for defensive personnel. If you got a lackluster guy, at a certain point, man, I think what we're seeing is what's going to be the norm. You try to junk it up, you try to scheme your way around it, but hell, you lose Deion Jones and both safeties in Atlanta, yeah, you're going to get carved up every week. Like, much you can do about it. But no, your point, and I think your point is historic too, because we saw that with the Peyton Manning teams all those years, where people used to say Peyton Manning used to choke, but the reality was, Indy was really good at running up the score during the regular season, but then when they played better defenses, those scores were harder to come by, and, you know, you would lose every once in a while. That's all that was. But so yeah, I agree with your point, man.
Yeah, and we're a little old school still here. I don't know if we've completely adapted to the modern age of football, so we're possibly still thinking in these terms of, you know, you got to run the ball, you got to play defense, but I think, even though the NFL is changing away from that, you reach a point in the season when you need that, even if it's just for one game.
Mm-hmm. True. But the flip side, you know, as Robert De Niro and Heat, is the flip side to that coin. The teams who have loaded up on defense, these are also teams who sometimes on offense, they look really, really bad, to the point of where they're either trying to just manage the game and get through it, or they can just be a detriment to the team where they're just losing field position or turning the ball over, and they're actually going to beat themselves. Because, look, man, good as that Jacksonville defense is, if Blake Bortles, like, we saw it in the AFC Championship game. They just completely said, we don't trust Blake Bortles to just get first downs and win this game. We're going to take the ball out of his hands. And they ended up giving up an easily winnable game. So, that, you know, there's another side to that, too.
You know, and it's funny because Dre and I were just talking about this. We were talking about this like a show or two ago when we were talking about the Super Bowl. And we talked about this in the Super Bowl recap, was for all the offense and record-setting numbers and the scoring and the passing and everything –
It was a bad football game.
I'm on board with you there. I didn't think it was a very good football game. But, I mean, it was fun to watch, but it was not good football. But the Eagles made two defensive plays in that whole game. The Patriots made zero.
Those two, they won the game. That's it. That's all you need.
Two plays. There was they blew up the guy on that tackle to force the Patriots to kick that early field goal right at the line where the guy was going to skate across and the Mike Jones play, and the guy just came out of nowhere off the screen and blew him up like a half yard from the marker, and then the strip sack, and that was it. So the Eagles defense needed two plays to beat the Patriots, even though this record setting or great or elite defense, as Andre calls it, of the Eagles got completely embarrassed for the rest of the game, but they had two more plays than the Patriots had.
Yeah. I mean, that game was just a case of blown coverages everywhere. Like, just bad tackling. Like, it was a really badly played game. But since it's the Super Bowl, we kind of, you know, just fall into the, oh, well, they scored a lot, so therefore it was good. But no, it really wasn't. And, to be honest, I don't know what happened to the Eagles defensively, man. I know the front four is not getting the pressure that they got early in the season last year, and they've been really struggling in the secondary. But at this point, man, I'm fully on board with betting, you know, a little bit of Minnesota this week, because I feel like they're going to score a lot too.
Well, to my point about the playoffs being the barometer by which you measure what these offenses are going to do, you don't see them winning championships by running up the scores. It comes down to the defense. When you think about the final four teams last year, you had New England, which was getting there on their offense. The defense was terrible. But then you had Jacksonville, elite defense, Minnesota, elite defense, Philadelphia, elite defense. All those great offenses, you need an elite defense to come through when it's time for winning playoff games, because you just can't go out there and put up 450 yards through the air and expect to. Ben Roethlisberger has a couple of rings, but you would think he'd have a lot more the way he puts up 400 yards every game with no problem. Matty Ice and the Falcons putting up all these yards through the air. But if you don't have the elite defense on the other end, eventually you're going to run into a team that can stop you, and then you're kind of stuck. Like, what do I do now? And you just don't have the answers.
Yeah, or if you don't have the elite defense, at least elite playmakers who are going to do special things during the postseason that'll kind of, you know, get you by.
Yeah.
But, you know, pull up those NFC and AFC championship games. There was a lot of yards in those games, a lot of points in those games, too. The Minnesota-Philly game, I mean – that was not what we expected it to look like. Like, we thought we were going to see a brawl, and, you know, they ended up going up and down the field.
No,
well,
the Vikings D had a bad day, no doubt about it.
And, you know, you're talking about that special playmaker. Don't tell John Gruden that.
It's so hard to find. It's so difficult to find one. It's just so hard.
I don't know. I don't know if we're so smart that we're getting dumb when it comes to football. But yeah, you got Gruden doing stuff like that where he's talking about elite guys, and then we got this thing where we've decided certain positions are more important than other positions when the outcomes are actually the thing that's most important with any player. So yes, if you get a Pro Bowl quarterback in the draft, that's more important than a Pro Bowl running back. But if the running back is a Hall of Famer and your quarterback is just a 10-year veteran, then the running back is the better selection. But now we're doing this positional value thing to where we're just throwing common sense out the window and saying, well, they're good, but he plays this position. Well, that's really not how it works, man, because you don't know which draft picks you pick are going to pan out. So your team is kind of going to be built around the guys that do. But, we're kind of trying to force things the way we want them to be, which is a really weird position for NFL teams to take.
That's how you wind up with 5 quarterbacks drafted in the first round.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of them are going to really work out. Naj, great stuff as always. Thanks for the call, man.
Indeed. Y'all have a good one.
All right.
Good night.
More good stuff from Naj down in Atlanta. Yeah, I don't know how you can really put more money for the salary cap on defense, though, because the smart teams are taking all the defenders that you'd want to put that kind of money on, and they're locking them down. Like,
yeah.
Oakland notwithstanding with Khalil Mack, of course, the Bears locked them down, but the Rams with Aaron Donald, the Broncos with Von Miller, they're not letting those guys hit the free agent market, so you really can't spend that kind of money and upgrade like that.
It's the baseball analogy. We're going into the postseason here now. We're going into the baseball playoffs, and you're going to have some of these high-flying teams that hit a lot. They're going to run into some good pitching, and they're not going to look so good anymore. It's no different in basketball. It's no different in football. It's no different in hockey. Every one of the major sports, defense wins championships.
Yeah, the Yankees ran into some great pitching with the Oakland A's tonight.
The A's ran out the Tampa Bay Rays strategy bullpen game, and I'm glad. I hate the Yankees, and I don't want to see any more because I know what we're going to get now are 6-hour, 9-inning games between the Yankees and the Sox here. But I am just so glad that somebody went out and just completely shit all over the bullpen game strategy.
They
put
thought
that thing
they were
down.
Thought they're gonna win a playoff game doing that shit. Who? Why would you think that's gonna work?
Like it's an all-star game.
Why? Oh. Yeah, that's not gonna stop somebody else from trying that again next year or the year after. So, but I completely
for
agree
one night,
with you
for
to
one
laugh,
night. I'm just
to laugh
it,
at
it,
the
I'm
A's
happy.
For trying that bullshit. Yeah,
they had 2 starters that could have come in that game, and you could have split it up. You could have had Edwin Jackson. You could have had Mike Fiers. And they kind of bypass that and just try to bullpen game. It's just junk.
Nah, we got to go with Liam Hendricks with our season on the line.
And he immediately promptly gives up a 2-run bomb to Aaron Judge.
We can't criticize Liam. That's my teammate, though. That's
my teammate. It's my quarterback.
It's my relief pitcher in the first inning getting jacked by Aaron Judge. You can't criticize that, man. All right. The got a lot more to get to for week four in the NFL, the rest of our recap. So we'll get to that in the after show. I wanted to talk about
that. We got to make a pick.
Oh, my God. I completely forgot that there's a Thursday night game tomorrow night.
We didn't even get our pick in.
Completely forgot. got it. There's the whistle just as we go off the air. Is there any chance at all that you're taking the Colts over the Patriots? The Colts have a bunch of injuries now. T.Y. Hilton isn't even going to play.
No.
A bunch of defenders aren't going to play. And Julian Edelman comes back from suspension for the Patriots. So they're adding on guys that they might not even play Gronk tomorrow night because they don't need him. But in any event, Indy is a 10.5-point dog at New England.
Had the Colts been more healthy, you know, after what they just showed, I may have been more apt to take the number here. But, yeah, no T.Y. Hilton. Defense is banged up. The Patriots kind of got right. And this is another primetime matchup for them against a fairly weak opponent. If it, again, a strong opponent, different story. I think the Patriots can definitely do some bum slaying, so I'll just give the points. I probably won't even watch this game.
I concur, and I don't even have anything else to add to that. The Patriots doing some bum slaying, following up the Dolphins' win by killing the Colts, who are going to be extremely shorthanded.
I mean, it's not going to be like an embarrassingly horrible defeat, but this just feels like a 31-16 kind of game.
Yeah, I don't know if the Colts can get to 16 if they're. I mean.
It's the Patriots' defense.
That's true. But Ryan Tannehill looked completely lost after that first series where Patriots are going to go off the field and the referees give him another shot, and everything went New England's way from that point forward.
Right. Now, and of course, we have to start the narrative of the hard-charging Patriots. You know, they're gonna have to reclaim first place.
Yeah, all of
blah,
it.
Blah, 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 blah. Although the Dolphins, I believe, have a bye this week. No, they're playing Cincinnati. Ooh, oh, boy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There they are. Bears and the Bucks graciously have the bye this week.
The Bears need the bye to recover.
Ships passing in the night.
The Bears need the bye to recover from all the points that they were putting
up. They need rest. They're tired.
They turn into the Tecmo Bowl team for one day, and the Bucks need a rest from the absolute ass-kicking that they got. I don't know what that was all about. All I know is I was just wishing last show that Mitch Trubisky and Matt Nagy would get together and show some of this coach and QB chemistry that we've been seeing all around the league. And sure enough, for only one day, they look like that they could be right up there with any other team. It's only one day though.
Yeah, and the Bucks were ripe for the plucking. You know, we saw the magic wear off of them. The shine came off of them a little bit the week before in that Monday night game against Pittsburgh, and here it was unfolded. And this wasn't even like they weren't turnover happy. They just could not progress the ball down the field. A lot of punts. And, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, he did not turn into turnover Bernie Sanders the way he did the week before against Pittsburgh. They just couldn't get anything going. That Bears defense is one of the best defenses, top five defense in football now. And they were already a top defense last year, and they added Khalil Mack, and they're going to feast on bad teams like this. And I don't want to put them in the same class as Jacksonville, but this is what you see sometimes from very good defensive teams, is the defense gives the offense so many opportunities that if your offense is having a good day, you can easily put up 40 points. And we saw Jaguars do this. The Jaguars were one of the highest scoring teams in football last year just because their defense was so good.
Right.
So we got a taste of that for the Bears. So we see what the Bears are going to do with bad teams.
Yeah, more of that, please. Bring it on.
So, and we also see what they can do at home. You know,
I was just about
going to travel as well.
I was just about to suggest that's also that's something that Trubisky doesn't seem to be able to do something like that on the road yet, which is
I mean they come off the bye and go down to Miami. I don't want to be bold here, but I don't think they're going down to Miami and winning 48-10.
No, that's not going to happen. They can certainly win, but they're not going to win like that.
Right.
So probably go a little rapid fire through these other things about week four because they're both tired and loopy. And
I've had, you know, sleeping out of my bed the last couple of nights. I haven't been sleeping the greatest. So, yeah, it'd be nice to get to bed here. But, no, we got a few more games I'm sure we want to talk about. We can stick a fork in the Giants. They're done.
Oh, God, they look crap.
I think you gave them – did you ride with them?
Did I ride with them?
Now I'm done.
Who are the Giants playing? No, they were hosting New Orleans. No, I
okay. That's right. We both said we didn't want to regret that pick, if I remember correctly.
Right.
That everything was like, oh boy, you know, that nothing really aimed toward the Saints in this one. It was like road favorites, dome team, Giants are desperate, but they're terrible. So
yeah.
So awfulness at the end. We usually win out. So no, the Giants, God, that should have been the shut up bowl, not the Oakland Cleveland game for all those people before the season started talking about how the Giants were going to win the division and the Giants are hot shit and they have all these weapons and just shut up.
No, New Orleans got out of their slumber. Alvin Kamara happened, and we figured that he would. And at least a few of those four games that Mark Ingram was suspended, we figured Kamara would have huge days, and he had a huge one Sunday. And now Mark Ingram's going to be back. He greeted them at the airport when they got back from New York. That's how much he was ready to get back with the team. So they're going to be whole again, so look out for the Saints.
Leave it to the Raiders to score 45 points, but not be able to give us a cover against the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, that's Baker. Well, it's also Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
He showed some things. He showed a lot of things, but it was against the Oakland defense. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt. And I don't know if you saw the highlights of that game, but it was a really, really, really bad day for the referees out there in Oakland. I heard
that a lot of that was sort of fueling the Browns' comeback.
But also wound up stomping on the Browns because the Browns had
too.
a couple of opportunities to put it away. And the referees' bad decision making. One time they blew a turnover dead. They knocked the ball out of Oakland's hands, and they were running the other way for a touchdown, but the referee saw something. I don't know what he saw, and he blew the play dead before they could get a touchdown, so that really sucked. And then also trying to get a first down in, I think it was in overtime, or was it right before overtime, but trying to get a first down where they get awarded the first down, the Browns do. And then upon further review, somehow the officials in New York said that, no, that ball needs to be spotted back before he got the first down, even though no one seems to know what they could have seen on replay to make them move the ball back. It's supposed to be incontrovertible evidence. It's supposed to be something where there's no way you could contest it on replay. If it's that clear, you have to do it. But this wasn't that clear, and that definitely had a lot of controversy behind it as well.
Yeah. So what were the records? How did we do this week?
Well, you got another game on me. I went 6-7-2, and you went 7-6-2. So the pretty good advantage I had on you the first couple of weeks, I said I wasn't going to get too excited about it, and sure enough, you're inching your way back. You're only three games back behind me now. You are an even 500 on the season at 30-30-3, and I'm three games up at 33-27-3. So we're pretty much right there.
I'm stunned 4 weeks into this season that we're both 500 or better.
It's been goofy.
More or less because of the fact that I just feel zero confidence in these picks. I guess a 50-50 proposition makes sense.
There you go. That's exactly what you're doing.
But 50% with the spread is still very good. So we should both be proud of where we are at this point in the season.
I am very proud, absolutely. Especially when you go, like I said, to pickwatch.com, NFLpickwatch.com, and you look at these quote-unquote experts,
yeah,
and you see some of the records that they're putting up, and it's like, okay, that's not really worthy
and
of being an expert.
Are those people making spread picks or straight-up picks? Hello? Uh-oh. I don't know if we got snipered. I don't know if I'm still talking or if Dre's still there. But apparently somebody from Pickwatch, whatever it is, doesn't like us talking about their site. Or they're Russians. Well, not quite sure what happened, but all we know is there's one rule in the after show, and that is when it's over, it's over. And you don't come back. So I'm going to go ahead and sign out. I don't know if I'm talking or if Dre's talking. If I am talking on behalf of my partner here, this has been in much less detail, the podcast. We will be back Saturday night. I am ready to go for Saturday. All should be right. We can do our Saturday show 9 p.m. Everything can go smooth. Hopefully we don't have any of the blog talk issues that we had tonight, but I have got a feeling that Dre is gone and not coming back. Or somehow I dropped because it says I'm still here. But I'm going to go ahead and sign off and see you all on Saturday night.